neither depressional or inflational, and that all money should come into existence at zero interest, and that interest should never be allowed to exceed 2%, otherwise the marginal profitability of employing capital is much easier to put it out at interest than actually employ it in something that actually produces wages and all the things that we need in a society. So the point being that Lincoln understood this, and he introduced what was basically designed by David Ricardo, but understood by Keynes, who saw that if one's interest is allowed to exceed 2%, you basically frustrate everything in the economy. And the other point being that fractional reserve means that the money that you deposit in the bank is debased by a factor of up to 10 times. For £1,000 deposited, or $1,000, the banking system creates up to 100,000 artificial, fictitious pounds or dollars, as we've seen now this collapse of how many trillions based on a very tiny cash base.
Well, you know, they knew that this system could go on for some time before it collapsed, because they used it when they were the holders of other people's gold. I mean,
yes, exactly. The money changer, or the goldsmiths, clearly saw this, and it begins traditionally in the city when they saw that that people didn't come along and take all the gold out, and they started to use the slips, the receipts for their gold, was started to trade, and that became basically the check system that was endorsed, and from that we've built it, this monumental, horrendous system. But the genius was for them to set up the central bank when it collapsed. And we've had, if you see out there, the book is coming out on the 1st of January, but the history shows that we've had at least 17 major crashes since 1720, all because of the same reason that's happened in 2008. It's not a new... but what happens, the central bank, the Bank of England, remember, is a private company, as is the Federal Reserve. All the central banks operate in the interests of the private banking sector. And they bail out the gamblers after they've crashed. So it doesn't matter for them that it crashes, but we, the people, will bail them out, and have done for the past 300 years.
Well, and you notice that now we have the super bank called the BIS, the Bank of International Settlement, which is now the Bank of Bankers, and that is, of course, run out of Switzerland. But I want to go back on a historic note here and ask you the role that Venice and Firenze, Florence, played with the Medici fortune and the migration of that fortune into the hands of the King of France, and then of course the undermining of that system, and then of course every single system that was profited was ultimately destroyed by this parasitic group, and then taken on the road to another place to puff up and rape financially, and then as soon as they were done with their usefulness, they were imploded, and it's been repeated over and over again.
Yes,
David.
Absolutely. Well, the history that forms part of the books begins in 2400 BC, and of course we have the Florentines, we have the Genoa bankers, the Casa di Giori Foundation, they've got round canon law, because the problem. It relates to the fact of the prohibition under all divine law, and also what the laws that say of Hammurabi, but also in Sumeria, 2400 BC, that debt was automatically cancelled in the 7th year. Debt was not allowed to exceed 7 years.
Jubilee.
No, this is pre-Jubilee. This is 2400 BC. The actual beginning, this is 2000, then 1491 is when the Mosaic Law, 1491 BC. So nearly 1,000 years before then, Lagash in Sumeria, debt was cancelled for the very reason that if you do not cancel debt, then it becomes exponential. What happens then, society breaks down, alcoholism breaks out, gambling, child molestation, child beating, etc., etc. Sounds very familiar, but this is what they understood, that this, as Aristotle and Plato said, that usury, interest, and that's any degree above zero, eventually destroys society by turning it upon itself. So all these killings that you see around the world, all these mad events that we see, this is the direct result of interest or usury, and it is the taproot from which all other crimes emanate, which is why Islam prohibits it. And Jewish Mosaic law, the same Islamic law that applied to the Israelites, they could only use interest if they could not defeat a society or an army by force of arms. They would lend them money at interest, and the society will self-destruct. It was not allowed to be lent at interest to the Israelites in Egypt when they lived amongst people, because that society would self-destruct and they would be turfed out.
Well, let's say, David, for sake of argument here, I'm elected president of the United States or the world, and I say tomorrow all debts, public and private, are no longer valid, and that we have an instant jubilee now, a jubilee year. They're 7 year. It's over. We start with a new money system. Everybody with any money who's been piling it up, the billions, is confiscated, all their wealth. Let's say a country like Switzerland does not return the money that's been banked in their country. We nuke the place, send the money back to the United States that's been stolen off of the American people, and give us our money back, and we start with a colonial script system that worked quite well because it didn't grow in its monetary base unless there was a production reason for it, and it was very measured, and it worked in the United States colonies for a very long time until the bankers got their hands on it.
Well, it was, if you remember who was it? Franklin, who came to London, and he addressed Parliament, saying that they were quite happy to bear the tax on tea, about the Boston Tea Party. They were quite happy to bear that, which was insignificant, but it was English bankers passing laws preventing them issuing colonial scrip that led to the War of Independence.
That's right.
So the issue is that tax is how we pay the interest. So taxation, basically, is a forceful form of saving, but it's also the means, the first call on all taxes to pay interest. Now, the Channel Islands still operate. They're not part of Europe. They're not part of any of the... they don't have VAT death duties because they refused to surrender their right in 1694 when the mainland here in England surrendered its right to William of Orange. And that tribe of bankers that moved from Genoa and Venice moved into Amsterdam, and then the British were Amsterdammed, basically. We had our civil war, and as I'm reading through the history that we've included in this book, Lord Clarendon is saying that since Cromwell's time, we have been surrounded by a tribe of bankers. So all these wars have been to bring about the usurers back into, to become usurer-friendly, let's say, not user-friendly. And so it's the game moves on, and England was then chosen as an offshore island that was not easily overrun. And so the city of London then became the center, the hole-in-the-wall gang moved to London.
Well, now they want to move the hole-in-the-wall gang over to Israel and run everything out of there.
Well, that's the agenda. That's certainly the agenda. But just to go by, if you had to, I don't suggest nuking anywhere, because the fallout will not stop at the borders of France. I mean, you'll have to move from France. There's no necessity of actually... If you're going to change the money system, you would actually redeem all the outstanding debts with money created by the greenback dollar. Would be the thing that we would do. It would be the treasury, the Bradbury that we issued in 1914, and it can be done overnight without because remember, the rich are not rich, or the poor are not poor because the rich are rich. It's just they haven't managed to make their needs constitute a market. So let everybody keep what they have. Otherwise, you will just have disgruntled people. We have to be fair. And
no billionaire keeps his money, David, under any circumstances.
Look, you don't. That's one way that's not going to work very well. Let everybody know that they will be treated fairly.
No billionaire keeps his money, David. Not a single chance in this world that a billionaire got his money by playing fair. That was stolen, and they can, and anybody who steals.
But wait a minute. We don't need his money. Let him keep his money. We will have a new system if he wants to continue hanging on to his money. But the point is that all legitimate claims have to be settled, whether he's a billionaire or not, or somebody who isn't. But if we want a system that is just and peaceful, we're talking about peace, but we're all in pieces because people want to get revenge or what have you, but there's no necessity. Everybody can keep what they have, but it doesn't prevent the poor and everybody else getting something or getting sufficient. And they can be done very easily overnight. It could be changed literally within 24 hours.
Well, see, I have a sense that I want justice, and justice would not allow what you just described to pass my litmus test. My litmus test has to say that anybody from the Zionist bent who has been amassing billions of dollars on the sweat and brow of other people's work has going to have their belongings confiscated, and that there is absolutely no possible way I would let them keep their booty. It's like somebody robbing my house, and I go to their house and I find my belongings, and I say, "Oh, it's all right. You can keep all the stuff you stole." Not going to happen.
No, and I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting that, that doesn't have to happen. You can start immediately to alleviate the problems straight away, overnight, by issuing Treasury money. This has to be the first call. It's the first call under the Constitution of America.
Yep.
And basically that's all you have to do. You can leave the other things on later, but everybody should know that they will be treated fairly.
Mm.
Now, if you've got to give your money back, fine, but you have to. It's like the Jews in Medina, when they were stopped trading in usury, the Prophet ordered them to be given a stipend because they couldn't continue in their business. It has to be just. It can't be something you take it off him and he then becomes in penury and becomes a visual terrorist rather than a monetary terrorist, because they are worse than any terrorist. But but it can be done. It's not that there is only so much money in the world. You create it, whatever you require. You spend it into circulation. You retire it through taxation.
Well, you know, it's
very easy to do.
You know a lot of quotes from historic sources, and I have seen quotes from Voltaire on this group. I've seen quotes by Churchill against this group.
Yeah.
I've seen quotes by Lincoln, by Jefferson, you can't even name a single great world leader that was interested in justice and fairness that has not had to weigh in against this group.
But they were all defeated, as with Churchill. He was bankrupted, and as soon as they bankrupted him, he had to then change his stance. But look, Lincoln's 17.1865 plan: money is a creature of law, and the creation of and the original issue of money should be maintained as the exclusive monopoly of national government. Money possesses no value to the state other than that given to it by circulation. Capital has its proper place and is entitled to every protection. The wages of men, however, should be recognized in the structure of and in the social order as more important than the wages of money. It's the most beautiful 17-point plan. All we introduce is that there's no necessity for anybody to go without. We just have to stop them doing what they're doing. And if you say, right, the new monetary system is this, then the money that they have, if it's being then of course would have to be accountable, as we did, you know, in Germany after the war. They issued new marks. It was 6 to 1,000 old marks. So you could easily force them to actually repatriate what they have, because it would become, let's say, no value at the end of the month. They would have to wait in. So there's a very easy way to do it, but everybody should be allowed to feel that they will not be penalized unfairly.
Well, you made a very important statement in this book, David, and I don't know if it was you that put it in or the man who wrote the original text, but it talks about the qualities of honest production and inventiveness being the real value in a nation. And
yeah, that's Adam Smith was the source of that, but what I've done with the book is actually just to can go through all the research and check it out and add new bits as it's come along.
Mm.
But Adam Smith was very clear that about these things, and we have to go back to the principles. We betrayed Keynes. We use Keynes's name for deficit spending, but anything that's being done in the name of Keynes is exactly contrary to what he wrote and spoke about.
Well, now, what I find is that growing our economies both in America and in Europe based upon the growth in capital and the growth in circulated money and the velocity of money and all these different ways of using monies to fabricate growth. The reckoning day is upon us. What do you see in our future, David, as You want to take a break?
No, it's okay. I'm okay.
You want? Well, here's the thing I'd like to know in your opinion. What do you see as the next step here? Because I already am witnessing a complete destruction of spending power and money and value, and I'm watching a complete meltdown of the financial system. And of course, you know, the Fed has no bullets left in its gun belt. They're virtually zero interest rates have been arrived at. We've got massive amounts of repatriating dollars coming back to America. Nobody buying treasuries. It's a nightmare. What do you see coming, and what do you see 2009 looking like?
Well, I think that if the people wake up to what's actually being done, we're hearing Gordon Brown saying now he wants to see the British show their Dunkirk spirit, or basically what they've shown they're good at doing is actually in adversity. But there is no necessity for having a long, slow program. Everything could be changed basically within 24 hours. Now, but unfortunately, people don't realize that there is a third option. This is to expand the M0, what we call M0, and that's a function of the Treasury. We don't need Japanese or Chinese money at all for that. That can be done immediately. There can never be a scarcity of money because men make money. There can be a scarcity of wealth, but there can never be a scarcity of money. So what needs to happen is that people, before they go to the barricades, is to know that all they need to do is to tell Gordon Brown and Alistair Darmy, who does know what the game is, because I have the record of his parliamentary questions that were asked on behalf of some of our members. So he knows what the game is. But, for instance, We had a letter from the Treasury in 1993 admitting that the government can and does finance itself to a small extent by the issue of non-interest-bearing money. This is the aggregate as known as M0, the stock of which is some 19.5 billion. Now that's only 2%. This was in 1993. All that the Treasury has to do is issue all money, 100% of it, at zero interest, spend it into circulation. If you need 15 trillion, no problem. You can spend it into circulation. But the people don't realize, and the guy who signed this letter on the 22nd of February 1993 with Anthony Nelson, MP, but also a worker for N.M. Rothschild, the greatest purveyor of world, you know, government-borrowed money, and he's saying basically there's little interest in this sort of money. Now, I'm sure that Arthur Scargill, when I told him, he didn't do anything, but we can demand that money goes into circulation. We don't need to borrow off the city, off China, or anybody. And the American Treasury can do the same.
Okay. Well, what do you see as far as I'm witnessing the prospects here in both Britain and America of a very draconian events taking place. America's looking like starvation for some, violence for others, martial law for everyone, troops on the streets. Are you seeing all of these things as a very real possibility?
Yeah, well, I'm saying that Ben-Gurion predicted all this, that he said, well, America will become a welfare state with a planned economy. This had to be the way that they played the game, was to bring conditions about that America, you've had an imbecilic president, but he's played the game for the bankers. And so Ben-Gurion's plan is coming to fruition, and world government will be in Jerusalem. Hence, there's no settlement until basically Palestine is cleared of Arabs. But the necessity of having a long, drawn-out depression doesn't have to be the case if people know that this is an administered depression, and it is going according to the 1929 model, and it was predicted by Professor Hodgson in Canada in 1993 that if Alan Greenspan is allowed to play doctor with the economy, we'll have a rerun of 1990 if we're lucky, or 1929 if we're not. So it's all it can be changed overnight.
Well, now, of course, I don't see their grip on power being relinquished voluntarily. How we would, be able to take the control back and start implementing some of these ideas is still somewhat of a mystery to me, because we still have so few people understanding what really needs to be done here, David.
Well, Lord Acton was clear. You know, and remember, he is the one who said power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yes.
And he said the issue which is swept down the centuries and must be fought sooner or later is the people versus the banks. Now, the banks have got away with it because they've always been able to use BSE, you know, blame someone else. It's the Germans, it's the Japanese, it's the Muslims. Now, this has been the Zionist plot, of course, for a long time, is to get everybody to blame everybody else but the real culprits. So people need to know the third option is open for any government, regardless of its whether it's a religious government or a non-religious government. The tragedy is, and I'll go to Iran. I was in Iran earlier this year. They have a base rate of 36%. Now, that already Israel is one in Iran. Iran is you can forget Iran; it's out of the question. But you have to educate people to say that they should be demanding this. This is what Islam calls for. This is what Christianity calls for. This is what Judaism calls for. It's what Marxism and all common sense things calls for. But people don't know that that is possible.
Well, all right. So now we're in a situation now where 2009 is looking possibly desperate, or if we wake up, we may have a solution. I don't see the solution being offered up. I think we got a lot of pain to go through to wake people up. What is it now? I mean, can you identify some of the culprits of this destruction? I mean, I of course we've mentioned Rothschild. I've got to say, if you're working with names, it has to be Oppenheimer, Brothman. We've got a lot of names. What other names are important?
Well, I just think that all the bank. I mean, as somebody described the banking system. I mean, Bearings were non-Jewish, but then it's not just a Jewish problem. It's a problem of those who were described as excrement living on increment by Hugh Kingsmill of the city. It is the system that has to change, and people also have to change themselves, because it's no good just pointing at these guys and saying they're the culprit. If people are involved with their money on deposit and other things, then we get the government we deserve. So it is the system that we are based on.
Yes, but why is it?
Can I just read you this quotation?
Sure, sure.
It is from Silvio Gesell, one of the great economists. He was an amateur, of course, so he wasn't taken seriously. But this is his prediction when they're signing the peace treaty in 1918, the armistice. And exactly the conditions that he predicted then are now obvious in Japan. But this is what he said when they were signing the peace treaty in 1918. He said, it's in a German language newspaper in Austria, I think Zeitung am Mittag, in spite of the holy promises of all people to banish war once and for all, and in spite of the cry of millions never again war, in spite of all the hopes for a better future, I have this to say. If the present monetary system based on interest and compound interest remains in operation, I dare to predict today that it will take less than 25 years for us to have another new and even worse war. I can foresee the coming development clearly. The present degree of technological advancement will quickly result in a record performance of industry. The buildup of capital will be rapid in spite of the enormous losses during the war. And through the oversupply of money, the interest rate will be lowered until the money speculators refuse to lower their rates any further. Money will then be hoarded. Now remember, in Japan, the rate in the moment is 0.1%.
Yep.
But they're not lending because there's no return when the interest rates are brought down to that level. So this is where the Treasury steps in and orders and issues the amount of money that is the economy needs, and this is what has to happen. But anyway, I'll just continue the quote. Money will then be hoarded, causing predictable deflation. Economic activities will diminish, and increased numbers of unemployed persons will roam the streets. Within the discontented masses, wild revolutionary ideas will arise, and also the poisonous plant called supranationalism will proliferate. No country will understand the other, and the end can only be war again. So in 19 years, what happened is exactly as he predicted, and we will have the same conditions that were leading to World War III unless we change the system based on interest and compound interest. And this is where the Treasury and the people like Alistair Darling and Incapability Brown and all these guys should be ordered to take that responsibility and issue all the credit that's required by every industry, every business in the country and throughout the world. That's what needs to be done. Well, it can be done.
It can be done, and I know it needs to be done. Whether it will be done or not is a far-off wish.
Yes, but the people out there listening, you saw what happened when the people found out they were being betrayed and misled on Iraq. We had 3 million people on the streets in England. Now, normally that only happens for animal rights issues. This one is the one that has to be... people need to know that it's not a shame to need money. It's like we have oxygen, water, food, and money is the means by which all the wealth is circulated. Once you let the medium of exchange become a store of value and trade it as a commodity, you destroy yourself and the whole world. This is the problem.
Well, I have to say, David, you know, it's all of the things we discussed in this file are extraordinary in that they're simple. And, you know, I have had private conversations with James Gibbs Stewart.
Yes.
And, of course, his idea was that gold should not necessarily play an important role in the formation because gold, again, would end up becoming hoarded.
Right. Well, look, this is precisely, but I have in the quote from Imam Ghazali, the 11th century, and Lincoln says exactly the same. Money should not be of intrinsic value because two things happen. It's either it's costly, and if you're in a country without gold, you have to import it. So it should be backed by whatever the community can provide in terms of skills and services. And once you tie yourself to the gold standard, as Churchill found, that he was going to hang the governor of the Bank of England for going on to the gold standard in 1932 and give King's evidence against Montagu and Norman, who had rearmed Germany in the interwar years. And that it's madness, and the idea that the Muslims are thinking about gold is nonsense.
Well, now,
totally unnecessary.
I have recommended that people, as an insurance policy, to have small amounts of gold or silver in the event of the dollar not being accepted as a means of currency.
Yes, that's okay. But it's something that it is a finite resource, and therefore, if you want to, as Lincoln says, it's insufficient to actually run the economy to have money of intrinsic value or convertible into paper. It's not a bad idea, but it's something that to say, well, we need gold. If you put a ton of gold on the piano, it will never play Mozart, or $1 million.
Well, I know that the tally stick system in Britain for use of in taxation and the use of money supply lasted 700 years, much longer than gold ever has in a single run.
Gold is useful for circuit breakers and things like that in computers. But the people who control the gold wish you to go into something that they control.
Yes.
And so this has been the folly, fool's gold, that you believe that gold backs money. But when a banker buys gold, with what does he pay? He pays with money.
Yes.
So it's nonsensical, but it's the illusion. It's an illusion.
But again, I will reiterate that I have recommended on my broadcast that people hold a certain amount of silver or gold coinage or even small ingots in the event that things get desperate, because, you know, we do have collapses of economies where goods and services are not available,
and
gold and silver will become an important medium of exchange in those environments.
But remember, in Virgil in Austria, in 1932, they issued the notes by the Unter Guggenberg issued notes, and the economy had revived. They had basically eliminated unemployment in Austria. All of Austria went onto the system, and then they were arrested, because the central bank saw that their control over the money supply and their control over the economy and government they were losing. So there is local exchange currencies as you have in Ithaca and places like that, or in Lewes in Cornwall, is basically this is what we need to have. There's just a quote here that Mr. Swan would have loved to have read this. In 1997, George Soros, in Capital Crimes in Atlantic Monthly, dated January in 1997, saying the untrammeled intensification of laissez-faire capitalism and the extension of market values into all areas of life is endangering our open and democratic society. The main enemy of open society society, I believe, is no longer communist but capitalist, but the capitalist threat. Now, this is what Mr. Swan is saying, that we have two kinds of capital, rentier, the man who rents money, and the producer capitalist, the person who produces radio shows and is a farmer, and both are in mortal conflict. And Soros is the one we defeated in Malaysia, so it's quite gratifying to read that.
Well, David, it brings us to the close of our broadcast. Of course, you know that I enjoy your knowledge. Your base of knowledge is remarkable, historically as well as you know, in the present. I have to say that I consider myself quite an expert at a lot of this information as well, and I have become more so since the last time we spoke. And I try to present this stuff as honestly as I can, and I try to give people an honest assessment of what I see coming. I do see terrible times in this short term. Whether or not we'll be able to use those times as an education tool, you know, people don't want to pay attention in this world unless they are shaken awake, and we have to shake them awake with some difficulty, and the difficulty's on the horizon. So maybe this is the wake-up call that we are all hoping will affect change. And is that a hope that you have?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think I don't want to see people suffer. I mean, it could be solved just within 24 hours, but it has to be the people know that there is a third option.
Yes.
At the moment, they're told that there is, oh, there's insufficient money and there's no money to lend. This is bullshit.
Yes.
Pardon the French. It doesn't have to be like that, which is why I've set it out in this book with Mr. Swan, to show that it could happen. In 1914, when the banks collapsed, remember, they ran out of gold after they'd given, but they'd issued that many promises to pay and redeeming gold, but of course the system collapsed. And John Bradbury issued 500 million treasury notes into circulation, and as soon as people got the treasury note with the king's head on it, they felt comfortable, and that could happen now. There's no reason that shouldn't happen, and America could redeem itself, but the agenda is one that's been set to bring about control of the world for this group, and we have to defeat them.
Well, I'm looking forward to a copy of your book. I do have the transcript of it presently. Will you be selling it on a website? How will you?
Oh yeah, it's actually it's been printed in India. We published it in India with a very good company, and also there's five volumes of New Islamic Economy that I've done the foreword to. So yes, it will be. I will notify you that the publishers are in Delhi, and I'll send you that information, and so you can order books directly from them. But we will also have stocks in the UK and Europe and North America.
May I have permission to use certain parts of the book?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It's yours. Yes, indeed it is. This is for people. It's not for us. There are more people that know there is a third option that's available immediately on demand, and that they could that they should be asking for it without feeling ashamed they're asking for something that's not possible. We must demand it.
Well, you will be heard by as many as 60 to 70,000 people on this broadcast. So, we've come a long way since the first time we spoke, David.
Right.
And as time moves on, I hope to get you back on the South African radio station if we can work out our shortcomings over there and get you into the millions. How's that?
Yeah, that's fine. Well, I'm here. We're here to serve. As Gandhi said, you know, we must be the change, and we're doing what we can. But the information we're giving is valid and workable.
Well, I want you to know that I wish your family and everybody you care for a great holiday season and into the new year.
And for all the listeners, too, from us, God bless, and just realize there is an alternative. We don't have to have a long, slow, drawn-out depression.
Well, David, again, you know, thank you so much for your time, my friend.
My pleasure, Rod Darren. Thank you for having me on.
I will speak to you soon, my friend.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. God bless.